Hail cheaters and welcome to the Always Cheating Fantasy Premier League podcast. My name is Josh. I'm here with Brandon. Brandon, game week one in the books. How do you feel?
That was pretty insane, man. That was perhaps the most insane game week one in history.
Yeah, it really was. I totally agree. I mean, it started with a 7-goal thriller on Friday.
That game foretold what was to come, and that it was just all complete mayhem. Perhaps not the best quality football we've seen.
I feel like that caveat's not even necessary anymore, because I don't know what high quality football is. I mean, I know that, like, I agree with you, probably isn't the most high quality, but it's fun. You know, the Premier League is fun, and either you want fun or you want high quality, and you probably can't really have both.
Yeah, need we reference again the top 10 rules for FPL success? Have fun.
That's right, exactly. So it was a crazy game week. It was a pretty good game week for me, and I think pretty good for you as well, right? I mean, maybe not, like, you had a couple areas that you want to improve, but not bad.
Yeah, I guess just jumping to Tom Knight's question on social media, he says, not game week one specific, but what do you consider a good or bad game week? So I actually, before Tom even asked this question, I'm thinking about this in respect to my 72-point score. It's well above average. The average this week is 58 points. And as we said, game week one is usually really hard to predict. Often can be low scoring. I think I was in the 50s last game week one, which seemed pretty standard. So yeah, by all accounts, I should be happy with a 72-point score, but somehow I'm unhappy with it. I'm just seeing a lot of problems with my squad. Right. And the big point hauls came from very predictable areas, you know, Manchester United, Manchester City,
Spurs,
and Spurs and Liverpool. So those all delivered. So certain questions remain to be answered, and I have a lot of problems now to fix in my team.
So, Brandon, before we get any further, let's talk a little bit about how we're going to do this podcast. It's nice to have a reactive podcast for once, right, where we're not previewing stuff. We actually have stuff to talk about that counts, you know, like people
it
have.
So points, it know? Is so hard to act like you know what is going to happen in the future because
exactly,
yeah, you know, these things are just so difficult to predict. You often are made to look the fool.
I know. I mean, we got to ask like a lot of questions before the game week started about like how, you know, Coutinho not playing is going to affect Firmino. And it's a very difficult question to answer. And anyone who pretends that they know the answer is lying to you, right? Or they're just what they're doing is they're making it up and they're pretending that they know for a fact, you know. But it's a very complicated thing. Not only, even if you look at the evidence from last year, you know, Mo Salah wasn't playing last year, right? And we already saw in game week one how much he's affecting every aspect of their gameplay. So it's you know, it's a very difficult question to answer. Anyway, so before we get into all these difficult questions,
What are we going to talk about this podcast?
We're going to talk about part one. First impressions. That's what we're going to do right now. We're going to talk about our own teams. We're going to talk about the Hail Cheater Super League a little bit. Part two, we're going to talk about the key questions going into game week two. Some questions about 7 million midfielders, questions about Man United players, lots of different questions. And then part
questions
three,
about my team mostly.
It's mostly about Brandon's team. And then part three, we're going to preview the fixtures in game week two. And that's the podcast.
Far out, dude. That sounds good. All right, so I kind of talked about how my team did. Josh, you had a stellar week.
I did, and I finished on 94 points for the game week, which is probably the best opening game week that I can remember having. I'm like 24,000 in the world right now, number one in a lot of personal leagues. I'm even in the top 50 in the Hail Cheater Super League, which I think in all the years we've done this, I've never been in the top 50 once. Like any
You're on
one,
the front page.
Any game week ever.
Josh, screenshot that.
Yeah, I really should. Exactly. So I'm number two in the Patreon Supporters League. So this is like a night. I'm enjoying this nice moment.
We need to talk about that, though, Josh. We'll thank all of our lovely Patreon supporters in a little bit. But this is not how it works. We're trying to ask these wonderful listeners for their money. And you don't turn around and then beat them at your own game.
I know. Really, I need to start playing worse. And I think that'll start in game week two. So, I was it was a pretty exciting game week. I guess the biggest thing, and it was kind of flew in the face of stuff we talked about in the podcast. I mean, actually, I almost felt a little guilty about it. But on Friday, tinkering with my team, trying you know, a million different formations, and I really felt like I needed some Liverpool coverage in my squad. The only way for me to really do that was to bring in Firmino. You know, at 8.5, he just basically it was either it was Willian and Gabbiadini or Ward-Prowse and Firmino. And mm-hmm. I just ultimately thought that the upgrade from Gabbiadini to Firmino was so much larger than the upgrade from Ward-Prowse to Willian that it was worth the move. So I brought in Firmino, but it made for a slightly, you know, pretty expensive front line. And I had pretty expensive back line too with De Gea and Bertrand. So I brought in Higazi, who is the West Brom, 4.5 million West Brom defender. I brought him in for two reasons. One is on Friday morning,
Ben Dinnery. I want to hear all the rationale for this.
Right, right. On Friday morning, Ben Dinnery had a, you know, a quote from Pulis who said that, you know, McCauley, who Higazi is ostensibly replacing McCauley, that McCauley is still out and hopefully he'll be ready in a few weeks. And so I thought, well,
he's also, you know, an ancient man, McCauley.
Yeah, exactly.
We may never see him again.
So I thought, well, you know, he's at the very least, he's going to play for the next couple of game weeks and two or three. And, you know, he might go away. He might not play starting in game week four or something like that. But why don't I solve that problem then? You know, why don't I, like, sometimes in the past I've made this mistake of not bringing in a player of value because I don't like their fixtures on the line or I don't know if they're a sure starter. But sometimes you just need a good, you know, points count every game week, you know. And so if there's a chance to bring in, I just thought he was the best 4.5 million starter for game week one. And probably game week two, you know, an excellent starter for game week two as well, away to Burnley. And so I thought, well, it was just worth the risk, you know. And then
Sam Vokes, I might have just,
yeah, that's true. We'll talk about him in a minute. So I brought in Higazi, and then he. There was the Ben Dinnery thing, and then someone sort of casually joked on. They were responding to someone who was like talking up J. Rodriguez, and he said, "Well, you know, if you want a player in West Brom that can score, you got to bring in a center back." And I was like, yeah, that is true. It's like, they're like some of the players who scored in West Brom. So, yes, I brought him in. I got 15 points, and it totally justifies the punt because now, even if he gets a blank the next two game weeks, I'm still, you know, I mean, even if he got 0-0 in game week two and three, I'm still averaging 5 points per game from him. So,
yeah, and at 15, yeah. He was the top point scorer in the entire game, and he's top of the stats charts right now on the FPL site.
Yeah, exactly. So I got Higazi, then I had Danilo, Bertrand, and De Gea in my backline. Danilo was another player, kind of like Higazi, who, you know, do I think I'm going to have to take him out eventually? I do. But do I think I can get 3 weeks out of him? Yes. You know, and so.
Yeah. The only worrying sign with Danilo right now is the fact that he was the first to be subbed out.
Right.
When Pep wanted to start tinkering with wing play. Yeah.
And I did anticipate that, too. And, you know, I can go. He can actually. If he goes on the bench in game week two, I actually have Ben Mee on the bench. You know, and they're hosting West Brom in game week two. So I felt like I was pretty covered, even if he doesn't play.
Yeah.
So that was the rationale. Then I captained Lukaku like many of us. And I had Christian Eriksen. Loftus-Cheek, I only got 2 points from, but I was happy with how he played. And so I feel like he's okay, it's okay as a fourth. I don't know how I feel about having a fourth midfielder long term, who's only who's like a 4.5 million guy, and what looks like might be kind of a bad team, right?
Yeah, that Crystal Palace result was perhaps the most damaging FPL result this game week, I think, in my opinion.
Yeah,
the most worrying.
It was worrying, especially for everyone who has Zaha. You know, it's definitely a concern. The one move that I made that I regret was actually having Ward-Prowse. I got 3 points for him, which is okay, but. I wish that I had gambled on someone like Aaron Mooy. I wish that spot was a spot for me to take a risk. And I feel like I kind of went with the obvious choice, but,
you could have hit the century mark.
Yeah, exactly. But I didn't think he was very impressive, Prowse. And so I'm either not going to make a move this in game week two, or I'm probably going to bring out Ward-Prowse.
You missed a perfect opportunity to make a prowess pun right there.
I did.
His prowess was not so.
It was hanging there.
Although, if we make a pun based on somebody's name, surely we'll get a tweet saying that we're just mispronouncing their name. So, the League of Nations will tweet us and say it's actually pronounced Prowse.
All right, Brandy, before we get any further, Mark, mBison22 on Twitter says, we have a special segment with its own theme tune to pay homage to the Volkswagen.
I think we need to put this out to the always cheating community. I'm sure we have some musicians out there, but given how much this podcast has loved Sam Vokes.
Yeah, let's give people a little background here. We have a lot of new listeners this year. Let's talk about Vokes for just a minute.
Okay, it goes back to the start of last season. Burnley was playing Liverpool, and it was game week 2 or 3. And both Andre Gray and Sam Vokes ended up scoring, and the bandwagon was gravitating strongly toward Andre Gray, even from the preseason. But I just had this feeling about Sam Vokes, and I wanted to be vocal about my love for Sam Vokes, and that sort of carried through our podcasting season. Whenever I had the chance to sing his praises, I did. And we kind of got this thing going online about the Volkswagen, get on board, and it's snowballed from there.
It really has. Yeah. So it's who are kind of the all-stars in Always Cheating? It's Sam Vokes. I guess.
Well, D'Amerci Mbakani, of course. D'Amerci
Mbakani, of course. He's the patron saint of the podcast. Quadmopoku.
Yeah, Quadmopoku, famous NYCFC, now Miami.
You got a lot of Britos love. You didn't actually end up having Britos in the end.
Yeah, it's funny that I mentioned Brito. Okay, so if I set my team like I had mentioned it in our Game Week 1 preview, it's a pretty killer picks in there, including Meunier and Miguel Britos, but I didn't end up retaining Britos in my squad. So my impulse when people started tweeting at us like, oh yeah, Britos, you guys must be loving this. I almost wanted to lie and say, yeah, this is great for my squad, but no, I didn't have him.
Well, I America appreciates the honesty.
Well, and I mentioned at the top, Josh, my score for the week was 72. My real problem ended up being my midfield. So I had the same front line as you. It's Lukaku, Kane, and Firmino. Definitely feeling exactly how you were feeling, and that was a great way into the Liverpool attack. It seemed necessary. And I ended up spreading money around my midfield in a completely haphazard, idiotic way. And I brought in, I went for Wilfred Zaha, which sort of was the straw that broke the back, so to speak. And I ended up then with Alex Iwobi and Ryan Fraser from Bournemouth.
That's a thin midfield.
Yeah. And in my back line, I brought in Kyle Walker, and that's what I was really debating going into the transfer deadline. Like, in the last 30 minutes up to the transfer deadline, I thought, I'm spending too much money on Kyle Walker. This isn't going to work. It's very risky. I need more money somewhere else, or I need money in the bank for repairing going into game week 2. Right. And the problem is really my money outlay in the midfield. I probably, like a lot of people, should have went in for 2 4.5 midfielders. Now with Iwobi and Fraser, Iwobi is a bigger concern, obviously, because he didn't see a minute against Leicester. Ryan Fraser played the full 90, and Bournemouth have a decent home matchup next week to Watford. So right. I feel like it's worth sticking by him. But I can't take Iwobi out and plug in and we're going to talk about 7 million midfielders coming up. I can't plug in somebody like Willian or the like. So there's a little bit of work to do there.
Yeah, you're burning 4 in game week. Yeah, I see what you're saying, because it's actually, even if you, I guess you could drop Walker for like Hagazi or something and free up 2 million, but that seems like you're like robbing Peter to pay Paul. I don't know. It feels like you're not like, that isn't actually like a net benefit, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Walker is still a very scary player to own because you don't know what's going to happen with that Manchester City side week to week. But having watched the entire City Brighton game, Walker looked fabulous. He looked fantastic. He was getting really far forward and he looked very confident. I can see a lot of points coming from him, assuming he retains that position for the full 90 week in, week out. And at this point, we have no reason to think he won't. So I'm sticking with Walker, and I think Zaha will be the first to go. He's the one on the bubble.
Zaha over Iwobi, because you can put Iwobi on the bench or something, or?
Yeah, the rotation of, and like everybody else, I have Tom Carroll, so there's some rotation there. Carroll against Manchester United next week is not tantalizing in the slightest bit. And Zaha, there is this talk of him being possibly injured on his knee. There was something, I don't know if it was Instagram or his Twitter feed, but he had a knee brace on and he said something like, God will take care of me.
Interesting.
Slightly concerning. So we have to keep our eye on that.
When you're talking about God, like, seeing you through something, that is usually not a good sign. I will say, if I were to offer some unsolicited advice, I mean, it does seem like I would... I mean, I feel like if Zaha does play, he could really do some damage to that Liverpool backline in game week two.
Yeah, I do agree.
Chorus.
Yep. Where I am right now, I'm really overextended in my defense. Like, you have got De Gea, also have Bertrand, and then I had Nathan Ake. Nathan Ake still managed to pick up a bonus point, so he was predictably great in the jaws of defeat.
Almost scored at the end.
Yeah, so I'm happy to, basically happy to stay over-invested in my defense right now. And if I can, if it looks like Zaha's going to play over the weekend, then I think I might sit on a transfer and wait to do some surgery with two frees going into game week three.
Yeah, I think that'll make sense. All right, so that's a lot for us to think about. I bet there's a lot of managers who are listening who have similar issues. So we'll talk a little bit more about some of the problems, like some of the ways to solve these midfield problems in the next segment. But before we get there, I want to talk about the Hail Cheaters Super League. I'm not going to be listing my name here because I did not make the coveted top 10. I may never make it in all the many decades of podcasting that we plan to do, Brandon, 50 years.
There's no extended list to make a New York Times Book Review.
I know. Exactly. Let's run through this really quick. Number one. Actually, let's do a count up. Brandon, instead of a countdown.
Yeah, that's always more dramatic.
It is more dramatic. All right, I'll do 10 through 6, and then you can do the top 5. All right.
Okay, there are a couple of ties there, so you can read two people at number 6.
Yeah, exactly. Number 10, it's a tie. Kevin Setahats, Cyrus FC. By the way, everyone who's new to the podcast, I can't pronounce anyone's name, whether they play in the Premier League or they're part of our league. Tied number 10 is Mishu at De Gea. Richard Fox is tied there. I feel like that's a pun, but I mean, I get the Mishu Michu, but I don't get the De Gea.
I don't get it either.
Steve Ramsey's Diamond Dogs and Axel Bergstrom's The Rosie 16 are tied for 8th. Max Hui and is PepsiCo and Kyle Powers, Dice FC are tied for 6.
Nice to see a Pepsi, not Coke reference in the top 10 of the Super League. That's good to see.
Yeah.
Okay, we have a three-way tie for 3rd place. Matthew Missette, Dale Robinson's Class on the Grass, or Kloss on the Grass.
I like that Missette's team is just Missette.
Yeah.
Like, I should call my team just Landon.
And also tied for 3rd, Ross Lagerwood, yeah. His squad, Canny Bag of Tudor. He is a mainstay of the Hail Cheaters.
So the last of the Lagerwoods.
2nd place, on his own, Oystein Nashdad Skazdin, Loft Ass Cheek. I do like that team name as sort of...
That's your kind of humor.
It's a bit graphic, but I like that kind of humor. And at 1st place for game week 1, the Hail Cheaters Super League, it's Jimmy Yuda, his squad Here for Beer, scoring an epic 113 points on the game week. Well done, Jimmy. And a reminder to everyone listening, if you haven't done already, join the Always Cheating Super League. You can do so by finding the league code at all our social media channels or go to alwayscheating.com and click the league tab.
Brandon, we have a rant of the week. It seemed fitting to start this rant with one of the longest listeners and question askers on the podcast. Now, remember, Dave from Burnley is on a hiatus right now because we accidentally answered 4 of his questions last week. We just kept answering questions from him.
Yeah, he had a hat trick.
I didn't realize he had, like, I wasn't making the connection to the Dave on Facebook and the Dave on Twitter who was asking me questions. So we just kept reading Dave questions. It was insane.
I'll make the second multiplicity joke that we've made in this series run of Always Cheating.
Well, it was just funny because we now, like, you know, the podcast has been going for a couple of years. We got a solid number of listeners, and we often have something like 10 or 15 questions that we just can't get to for each podcast episode. And so for me to spend like half the episode just answering one person's questions was kind of funny. Anyway, rant of the week comes from Uppercut Panda, who says, Kane, why do that to me, Harry?
That was rough. You know, what can you say about Harry Kane? Was it predictable that he's not going to score again in August? I do kind of love the fact we both have Harry Kane and we're slightly burned by this, or we were dramatically burned by it. But I'm fine with all the other managers staying away from Harry Kane. Let us have his points, which are surely coming in the next week or two.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I hit the sidebar, you know, right at the end of the game. Should have scored.
Yeah, when he got that, it was a pass. I can't remember who put him through or if it was some sort of deflection or whatever, but he was just clear through.
Yeah, I think it was Son.
Rob Elliott just came out, made himself huge, and blocked Harry Kane's shot.
Oh, that was earlier. Close. That was earlier in the game.
That was in the first half.
Yeah, in the second half, he also had a great chance, and he actually, you know, went right off right off the post.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, he only ended up on 1 point, which is kind of funny. I mean, it's funny, too, because, of course, like everybody, you know, when you're watching these games, because, you know, we've all had so long to tinker with our teams, it's like you've had every combination of players. Like basically everyone who scored this weekend was on my team at one time or another. But there was an iteration of my team at one point where I had Sergio Aguero instead of Kane, and then I had Ali and Eriksen as my midfield, like my sort of my Spurs coverage was in the midfield. Uh-huh. And so of course, like, you know, when he blanks and the other two guys score or pick up points, I was like, ah, like, you know, sure, we all feel that way.
The old hindsight,
sure,
thing that sticks in your craw. We have a more philosophical question about Harry Kane that comes from Adam, who asks, is it wrong to get more pleasure from not owning Kane and him blanking than captaining Lukaku? So this is a bit of a Schadenfreude argument.
Mm-hmm.
I think both of us tend to think the same way here, where we're very much laser focused on our own teams, though we were thinking about the competition and ownership levels and all that. I definitely get more pleasure from my captain scoring a brace than the competition not scoring.
Yeah, I think that I agree with you. I guess in game week one, for sure. You know, later on in the season, maybe, especially if I'm trying to play catch up or something, I guess I would feel differently. I mean, he was captained by almost, I think it was like 23% of managers. So, you know, him getting a 1-pointer was not the worst thing in some ways if you didn't, you know, captain him. Yeah, but I didn't feel a lot of pleasure in him not scoring. I was kind of annoyed, actually. And if I didn't have him, like Aguero scored on Saturday, but that didn't really faze me. I didn't really, like, spend any energy feeling bad about it.
Yeah, this was another discussion that came up online while Lukaku scored his first goal. We said on our Twitter feed it was truly perhaps the first heart-pumping FPL moment of the season because so many people have Lukaku and he was captain. And then there was some discussion back and forth of, well, is it really heart-pumping if these points are actually going to 50% of the FPL league? And going back to what you were saying, Josh, because it is game week one, I think everything's a little more sort of neighborly.
Well, I mean, you know, I mean, that was, I mean, the thing was, you know, he was only captained by 27.8% of managers, you know, so,
yeah.
I mean, if you were, you know, one of the 73% of managers who didn't captain him, then it was pretty scary, you know, yeah. I mean, especially, you know, he scored that brace, he really probably should have had 3 goals in the game. It was, I was very satisfied.
Well, let me put it this way. You spend $11.5 million on one of the stars, if not the marquee player of your FPL squad. Even if he's owned by 50% of the league, he's got to score for your team to be functioning. You better be pumped when he scores.
Right. So. In general, I probably do get more pleasure from players farther down my team doing well. I mean, you know, I mean, the first heart sub moment of the week for me was for sure with Higazi scoring on Saturday. I mean, yeah. You know, I wasn't watching that West Brom match in real time, but just, you know, to have this kind of punt on a West Brom player who was kind of a risky player to bring in to begin with, for him to score. I mean, you know, everyone who's listening knows that feeling well if you played, you know, fantasy Premier League for a couple of years. I mean, or longer, you know, it's you just that feeling of like, I took a risk and for once it didn't blow up in my face because, you know, 4 to 5 times it does blow up, you know, and so that
it
one time
all Alex Iwobi on you.
Exactly. So, so that, you know, when you take the risk on, what we, you know, a differential, as they say, it's always a little more satisfying, but yeah, I mean, getting 26 points from Lukaku was pretty awesome.
Okay, Josh, I think this is a good moment for us to take a break, and we're going to come back and we're going to talk about key questions for game week 2.
Excellent.
Save! same old podcast, always cheating.
All right, we're back. And before we move on to the next section, Josh, let's take a minute to talk about Starting 11. Now, for those of you who listened to our last bonus podcast, we chatted with Thomas Braun, who is the co-founder of Starting 11, this amazing new daily fantasy app, which is available for you to download for both your iPhone and your Google phone, any Android phone. And we learned from Thomas all about Starting 11. It's this great new game, which you play daily, right? It's not like a season.
As long as there's more than one match you can play.
Yeah. And there's no budget involved. And the cool thing about Starting 11 is you have three in-game substitutions that you can make live while you're using the Starting 11 app. So if we're watching Manchester City and Gab Jesus comes out, which I'll talk about a little bit when I talk about my Starting 11 challenge, you can make a real-time substitution and bring in Bernardo Silva and pick up any points that he accrues. So it's just a really cool new way to play the fantasy game, and it's a way to participate like a real manager would in an in-game environment. Right. So, Josh, where can people go to download the app?
Yep, you can download the app just from your normal iOS app store or the Android store. If you want to learn more about the app or just get a link that'll take you directly to download the app, visit Starting 11, that's the numbers 11.io. Definitely listen to last week's bonus pod too, just to hear more about how the app actually works.
And the cool thing we're doing with Starting 11 is we have the opportunity for you, the listener, to challenge me or Josh to a Starting 11 matchup each game week or each day in which there are matches to play. In order to do that, you need our personal email addresses that are connected to our personal Starting 11 accounts. So just hit us up with a DM on Twitter or Facebook or send us an email to hailcheaters@gmail.com and challenge us to Starting 11.
Yeah, we both have some challenges.
Yeah, so how did your challenge go this weekend?
Well, I actually played on Saturday and on Sunday. Sunday went way better than Saturday. Although there's no excuse for me losing to Andrew Pop. He deserved it. He played better than me.
Fair
He's
show,
a better man. Andrew. I went Sandro over Rooney, and that was definitely a mistake.
Yeah, I lost it at the death to Stephen Toomey. He beat me by a mere 2.4 points. And I thought our points were sort of, you can see on the Starting 11 app where you are in real time with your points compared to your opponent. And we were going back and forth, first and second place. And at the end of Man City, when Jesus came off, he was in my squad. I brought in Bernardo Silva. And I thought that was going to take me over the edge. But Stephen, you just edged me. Coming up game week two, Luke Arnold is challenging me. I am willing to take on like 10, 15, 50 challenges.
Hit us up. Yeah, and I played Paul Ruki on Saturday, on Sunday today. That worked out a lot better. I was able to sub in Martial before he picked up a goal and an assist, and I actually subbed in Pug before he scored too. So I had something like 231 points at the end of Sunday. And so I did beat Paul Ruki, but Paul, I'm willing to play a rematch. So, you can find out more at starting11.io.
Yeah, to challenge us, you have to set up your account first, so make sure you do that. All right, we've got some Patreon thank yous this week, right, Josh?
That's right. It's the thank you corner. All right, I'm going to run through these very quickly, but thank you so much to everyone who pledges every single week. It's, you only pledge once a month, but everyone who pledges every week will thank you. But here are the new pledges. Eric Nguyen, thank you. Owen, Chris Alissaman, Hugh Patrick Campbell, David Kelleher, Roland Cook, Stephen Toomey, Jordan Ray, Jared Black, Tor Smebby, Eric Medbo, Andy Penn, Justin Stout, Ramon Diaz, Jordan Elmer, and Brian Moss. Thank you all so much. And if you have pledged and I've never said your name on the podcast, let us know and I'll make sure to I'll put it right before like the opening credits of the song, right? Like, I will thank someone, and then we'll start the podcast.
we'll put your name in the song.
Yeah, exactly. All right, and thank you so much, everybody. Brendan, let's get back to key questions for game week 2.
Okay, key questions for game week 2. We have many, and we also have some from our listeners. So, knee jerks, that is what is happening right now. I am all over FPL statistics right now, seeing prices are going up, going down, who's bringing in new players. I was shocked to see on the FPL homepage earlier today that Xhaka is currently the most transferred in player with more than 130,000 transfers.
I know, exactly. All right, so let's, Gavin, Vinny, and Fan. rants, bants, and rants, I'll ask us questions about early price drops and bandwagons and whether it's worth chasing value. And so let's talk about a couple of the players that are really climbing up the ranks right now. Okay, Brandon?
Sure, does that let's sound do good?
Is that okay?
Yeah, that sounds wonderful. Yeah,
okay, wonderful. All right, so yeah, I think the first one that we have to talk about is Meunier, who is striker for Huddersfield Town, joined from the French League in the offseason, and started with a plum, I think you could say.
Brace.
I can say that, and I did.
I am a total believer in Meunier. I guess the only hesitation I have there is Huddersfield has not been picked to finish very high up the table, and I think we still don't have enough intel to know how fluky this result was. Not to take anything away from the wonderful Huddersfield Town, but be prepared for a few blanks in Meunier's future.
Still, three home matches in the next four. They play Newcastle, Southampton, West Ham, and Leicester. Then they play away to Burnley in game week six. I mean, you could bring him in and play him every game week for the next 5 weeks.
Yeah, I think if I had somebody other than Firmino as my third striker, exactly. I would definitely be considering Meunier, because we're looking to free up funds to bring in, say, a Liverpool midfielder or a Tottenham midfielder. So definitely a viable candidate.
If I had Gabbiadini, or if I had even like Chicharito, I mean, I know these are players that have good fixtures in the next few game weeks, so it's tempting to hold, and I think it's fine if you hold with those players, although maybe not Gabbiadini, because I don't feel good about that. Doesn't just feel like he might not even start in game week two. I could see Charlie Austin
being fit again does worry me, and that's another point in favor of Meunier, and that is that he's locked into that starting 11.
If you had done Rooney as a game week one punt, I think Meunier is a great move. It frees up 1.5 million. What about Vokes versus Meunier? Is there any interest in Vokes? And that's another bandwagon.
I mean, what more can you say about Sam Vokes? I wouldn't discount Vokes. He looked really good. He took his chances well.
Fixtures are a little worse.
Yeah, the commentators are making a lot of Jack Cork. He kind of had this moment in the game in which he was on fire. He was delivering amazing service into the box, like perfect service that a player of Vokes's ilk, like big man in the box, can feed off of. So it could be that he's got, two or three goals in him in a month, which, more regular than he was last season.
I can just see someone who's debating between Vokes and Meunier thinking, all right, I know Vokes. I rely on him. I mean, we love Vokes, right? We're the champions of the Volkswagen fan club. And they might think, well, and he also plays West Brom at home in game week two. It's a pretty good fixture. But I just think if you're looking at the next 4 or 5 weeks, I think I'd rather have Meunier over Vokes.
Yeah. One other point in Vokes' favor is that he's on pens.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it remains to be seen what happens if Jonathan Walters is on the pitch. I assume Vokes would take that penalty because he's more sort of longstanding with the club and probably will have to lose them as opposed to give them up to Walters.
All right. So we have more individual teams to talk about here. But just while we're talking about some bandwagons, I mean, Xhaka, does Xhaka interest you at all?
My big takeaway from that Arsenal match is Arsenal is a complete basket case. I mean, granted, it was quite heroic that they were able to mount that comeback and end up scoring four goals against Leicester that looked fairly decent in portions of that match. But Xhaka made so many mistakes that led to those goals that saw Arsenal go behind. I was not impressed by him at all.
No, I wasn't impressed by him either. I mean, that guy's capable of some screamers, but I don't think that he's super impressive.
We can talk about Kolasniak, who was the big standout in that match. He's not a midfielder, but if you're looking to bring in an Arsenal defender, it looks like he's got a lot of attacking points in him this season.
Yeah, and I think we should talk about the midfielders in a moment, especially that sub 7 million bracket. But just while we're talking about other bandwagons, there are a couple questions about Hagazi in particular, who we talked about at the start of the podcast. So the problem with Hagazi is you know, it gets increasingly more difficult to justify bringing him in. I mean, if you had him for game week one, it's great. It's like winning the lottery. Yeah, 15 points from a 4.5 million player. There is going to be some rotation risk every week that goes by. You know, it's kind of like Ben Davies. You know, Ben Davies picked up 14 points this game week, but you know, every week that goes by, Ben Davies is at risk of starting. You know, because Danny Rose
who's coming in for Ben Davies.
Well, Danny Rose is coming back at the first international break.
There is talk of a possible move for Danny Rose.
I think that's just talk, though. I mean, there's talk about Man United doing some kind of Luke Shaw swap for Rose. First of all, Danny Rose is a great player, and Tottenham would be
it
insane.
It would be insane for them to lose both Walker and Rose in the offseason.
Danny Rose is too good of a player, and everyone stood by him after those comments, too. And he wasn't totally wrong anyway, although I thought he was, like, slightly, like, I need to know the names of these players. I don't have to Google them. Like, that was kind of shitty, because, like, there are people who, are just, like, playing in Africa or France or whatever who are good players, too. Like, just because you never heard of them doesn't mean that they, I mean, like I saw this talk about, like, Ross Barkley. Like, oh, yeah, they should bring Ross Barkley because, like, we all know who he is. Like, Ross Barkley sucks. I'm sorry. Ross Barkley's not a good player. Spurs will not be better served if they have Ross Barkley. Ross Barkley without him will have to win the league this year. So I'm not saying that I know who they need, but I don't think it's Ross Barkley.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, so, yeah, I see your point about rotation. And if Rose sticks around and becomes healthy, it's definitely a risk for Ben Davies.
Hey, Brandon, I have a name for you.
Okay.
A name that I would be considering if I was looking at bringing in a defender. He also picked up 10 points this game week. That name is Zanka. Zanka on Huddersfield.
So that's like a fancy version of a decaf instant coffee. it's like an energy drink meets Zanka.
Matthias Jorgensen, a.k.a. Zanka, picked up a clean sheet, an assist, and a bonus point, and has three home fixtures in the next four. He was kind of the one player that a lot of people talked about. As, like, if you're going to pick up one Huddersfield defender, he was the one to pick up. So I think I think Zanka is a player I would look at. I mean, Crystal Palace was definitely out of sorts, and I read a little bit afterwards about their formation, and they were kind of tinkering with things a little bit. They were playing Ruben Loftus-Cheek like out wide, and then they shifted things around a little bit, and they brought in what's his name, Andros Townsend, and they played a little better. I actually thought Ruben Loftus-Cheek looked pretty good in general, although
that's the consensus.
Yeah, and he won a lot of free kicks. That was kind of all he did, but he looked good doing that. he had like one really good pass too that people were excited about. But anyway, yeah, I think Zanka is I would probably take Zanka even over Higazi, and I know that the 15 points are those 15 points from Higazi are tempting, but I do think that there's some rotation risk coming up.
Yeah, and I do think playing the market early on, taking guys that we know are nailed on,
right.
Though, I guess you could argue it the other way, in that we're probably all going to be playing a wild card in the next month. So maybe the short-term picks, that makes Hazagi a little more appealing.
Yeah, I mean, my whole defense is like a house of cards. Like, as long as everything works out, it's fine. But I've got a 4 million guy who doesn't play in there, and Long on Burnley. I've got Danilo. I mean, it is like entirely possible I could have only two players start in a game week. So I'm going to have to move things around for a while. But I think it does make sense to bring in cheaper players for a while and try to play that price game a little bit, pick up 0.4 or something like that.
The knee-jerk I was feeling watching that Arsenal-Leicester game was Harry Maguire, who looked he looked fantastic. He looked dominant. He was ruthless on set pieces. He got that great assist to Okazaki. I can see him being a great player. And if Leicester is determined as they looked in the first half of that Arsenal match, I would guess that they're going to be flat track bullies against the weaker sides.
Yeah.
Kind of remains to be seen how they'll fare against the higher clubs. But I do like Harry Maguire as a early pickup.
I wish he was a little cheaper, because you can get Danny Simpson for 4.5. He's pretty nailed on, despite the fact that he looked pretty terrible in that game. Christian Fuchs also cost the same as Maguire, and I think I'd probably rather personally have Fuchs over Maguire, although I guess it kind of depends on how many set pieces they're winning and stuff. But
yeah, could be a wash there, I think.
Yeah, it's funny how that Leicester-Arsenal game feels like it was like 2 weeks ago or something. Leicester have a really good run of fixtures coming up, kind of starting in game week 5. But they play Man United and Chelsea back-to-back in game weeks 3 and 4, so I'd probably hold off at any Leicester players.
All right, we touched upon this earlier, Josh. 7 million and below midfielders. So, like me, this is where I really had to do all of my repairing going into game week two, or maybe like holding off and going into game week three. So there are a lot of options that have now come to the fore after we've seen a whole round of fixtures in that 7 million and less bracket. So let's start things off. Who do you want to talk about first?
Yeah, and there was a question from Tappin about the a lot of people are debating this right now because a lot of people had Fabregas as one of their midfielders. So all right, so who's worth the risk? Well, there's a bunch of interesting players here, and they asked about Ramsey, who I don't think Ramsey is worth the risk because again, I just don't know that he's going to start. And you know, if you don't think they're going to start, the odds are every other game week, you might get a one-pointer from them, you know, and I just, who wants, like, I'd rather have a more reliable starter on a worse team, you know?
Yeah, yeah. As I said with Arsenal, too, to begin with, they looked lethal at points, but still kind of a basket case. I'm not ready to invest there.
All right, I have two names for you. One, I'm actually considering both of them this game week, if I decide to really place Ward-Prowse, although I think I might hold Ward and try to save my transfer. So, all right, the first one is Chris Brunt. And, you know, no one really talked about Chris Brunt in the lead up because he was, you know, he was reclassified as from a defender to a midfielder, which is kind of funny, actually, because he was actually he was a midfielder in the game a long time ago and then got reclassified as a defender. So now he's back in the midfield role. You remember that? Like the very first season we played, I remember I actually had Brunt in my very first fantasy team.
You must have some kind of photographic memory. The history of Brunt doesn't really stick with me.
Well, yeah, maybe it's just because I had him on my team. But Brunt, so as we all know, typically what happens is a defender gets moved from defense into midfield, but it's typically a defensive midfield role. And it's kind of like the Eric Dyer syndrome, right? It's like once you get reclassified as a midfielder, then you just don't score enough to justify your value.
You're getting no points.
Exactly.
You're just accruing yellow cards.
But West Brom is not a normal team. West Brom scores like almost exclusively on set pieces, right? Yeah. I mean, not exclusively, yeah. Obviously. I'm exaggerating, but they score a ton of goals from set pieces. And
I thought Jay Rodriguez looked a little better than I had predicted in that match. I know we're talking about midfielders here, but just FYI.
I know. I just don't rate him in general. But I do agree. I know. Did he rattle the? Was it the post? I think he hit the post at one point.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, Brunt is on a ton of free kicks. I think he's on corners sometimes as well. He was just really involved. You know, he picked up an assist, but he was just really involved in the play in general. I think he almost scored later on in the match too. So, you know, he's only 5.5 million. I mean, for a fourth or, you know, for, I don't know, third or fourth midfield option, I think he's not terrible. But that's not the player I'm looking at. The player I'm looking at is Aaron Moy, who I wish that I just brought in from the start. He's an interesting guy. He comes from the Australian League. He was actually signed by Manchester City, loaned out to Huddersfield, and then Huddersfield actually bought him for Manchester City in the offseason. So he's kind of he's a little bit like Anthony Knockaert, who we've talked a little bit more about on the podcast. You know, just a player who's really involved in the attack for Huddersfield. And do you think David Wagner is going to be like coaching? He's on the Klopp track, right? He's going to be coaching like a huge club within like 2 or 3 years.
There's a nonchalance to him that does make you feel like
he belongs.
Just his presence altogether makes it feel like he's going places.
So Aaron Moy,
and I don't think it's those glasses alone.
No, but I actually listened to an interview with him last week too, and I thought it was he sounded pretty intelligent. So Aaron Moy, 5.5 million, as we mentioned earlier, great run of fixtures coming up for Huddersfield. If I was looking to free up funds, like if I wanted to get rid of Zaha, as you are, I think Aaron Moy would be number one on my list.
Yeah, I do love that he's on some set pieces. He's kind of like just an uber diet version of somebody like Christian Eriksen. Willian is fallen off of a lot of people's radar. Chelsea did not convince at all against Burnley. I'm kind of scratching him off of this list of characters who are 7 million and below.
Yeah.
The other options, Juan Mata, nobody really talked about him, and there was no assumption that he would even start against West Ham. But he's at 7 million, lest we forget, and if he's playing an integral role in what looks like is going to be, at times, a very attacking Manchester United, he's at least worth talking about. I mean, the rotation has got to really worry you there.
Yeah, I think that, yeah, rotation is the big worry. I think I'd rather pay the extra million for the security of maybe Paul Pogba, but, you know, Mkhitaryan, I thought, looked great, too. I think that he's going to be a real – I mean, lest we forget, Mkhitaryan put up insane numbers his final season at Dortmund before.
Sure, 15 assists.
Yeah, it was like 17 goals and 15 assists or something like that. So he, you know, and it sounds like he's finally out of the Mourinho doghouse. I don't know. How did he get into the doghouse? He always looked good when he played, you know. It's weird.
I don't know if there's some sort of finishing school. It seems like this is happening to Victor Lindelof now, too. You just have to sort of go toil in the Mourinho mines for a season and then...
But Pogba's played like 90 minutes for a game. Maybe he's just so good that that's like how it is. Sure. It's amazing, by the way, we've barely... Not that I want to talk about him right now, but just as a side note, we've barely talked about Lukaku so far. And, I mean, God, what a great fit, right, for Man U?
Yeah, Jesus. He looked good. I mean, I could do without Lukaku, like, every play, pointing to his feet or waving his hand.
He's
really lame.
His aggression is, like, it's a great trait, and it definitely serves him well. But, like, there are times when he's in the box and he's marked by three players, right? There are players on every side of him, and he is screaming for the ball.
He's like, I'm open.
Any other options stand out for you? I Pascal Gross I have on here too, and I don't think you could draw too much of a conclusion right now because they're playing Man City. The concern though really is that and someone brought this up on Twitter, but who's scoring on that team? It's great to have all these creators, but who's actually who's going to put the ball in the net? Glenn Murray is not a very good player either. I mean,
I hate to disparage all these English players today.
Yeah, I'm disparaging Murray and. Rose a little bit, and
I thought Brighton looked really organized. They look like they'll be a Burnley-esque solid team, and I would consider looking at some of their defenders, but I agree. Attacking, not so much. Going back to Huddersfield, Aaron Mooy, I am curious to see where Tom Ince finishes FPL points-wise with Mooy, because Ince still has... we believe he's on penalties over Mooy. I can't say that with certainty, right. But his attacking threat may be a little more direct.
Right.
So he may be scoring a few more goals. If you had an extra 0.5 into 6 million, I would be tempted there. Albrighton is a guy who looked fantastic against Arsenal, putting in some really delicious crosses. Albrighton has been a problematic figure in the FPL verse for a couple of seasons. I mean, he's kind of good off and on, and he never really seems to deliver when you need him to.
Right. Seems to like be on the outskirts of the rotation from time to time. I think he's a little older too, right? Isn't he? Is he in his 30s? I don't know.
40s even.
40s. Emery Chan is the last name on here. I think as long as Coutinho is out and Lallana is out, I think that he will have some chances. He's only 5 million, so he's a really cheap option. You know, he definitely frees up some funds if necessary. I don't know. I mean, he's a starter. He's a pretty clear starter in that squad, but he does play a little further back at times. So, yeah, just someone to think about.
All this uncertainty around Zaha is really making me sick. If I lose value on him because people start dropping him,
right,
and we don't know if he's injured or not, God, that's just going to be really frustrating. So anyone out there who owns Zaha like me, I'm feeling your pain.
He did look good at times in the match. I don't know how much of the game he saw. I mean, he did not look terrible, but he just does. It's all the Zaha stuff. Nothing changes. He's the same player he always was, right? He can't score, and all he does is fall down just constantly.
He runs into the box and looks for the nearest sprinkler head to trip over.
Exactly, and I guess there's some concern. I think maybe Luke Thunberg brought this up, but you know, he does seem like the prime candidate for the first two match retroactive ban for diving. I will say I do think the Gareth Bale rule should be in effect for Zaha, which is basically a very super fast, super athletic player. Like, you're just going to run into people more, and you are going to fly in the air because you're going so quickly. And every time
you're also trying to not get your legs taken out a leg breaking challenge.
Yeah.
So you're jumping out of the way.
And in slow motion, it can look really bad sometimes. But, you know, I mean, sometimes they really are just trying to save their bodies and not get the penalty. Right. So
All right, so we just talked about how we hadn't been talking about Lukaku. Let's jump into a little Man United section here, Josh. We have a question from one from Daniel and one from Martin Ure. Daniel wants to know if we're considering Paul Pogba. Josh, your feelings on Pogba's shooting ability, have they changed?
Yeah, he took a good shot. He looked pretty good in general. I mean,
it was really interesting to see. Yeah, and what happened to them when the game really loosened up in the garbage time, like when it passed the 80th minute. There was a lot of space opening up, and Pogba was just sort of prowling around up near where Lukaku was, whereas he was a little more deeper lying to start the game when they were just trying to lock down the result. I mean, I like Pogba, knowing that he's going to play 90 minutes all the time, and games will free up later on, and he's going to be taking a lot of those shots in garbage time.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like, it's, you know, you could take $2 million from Kevin De Bruyne and turn him into Paul Pogba, and if he keeps playing this way, then or Mkhitaryan for that matter. I mean, that eight million bracket's kind of interesting for Man U right now, and I guess I still don't feel 100% positive that Mkhitaryan's going to play every game week, especially when
that's the $1 million question. If people who are looking to make this switch this week, is it Pogba or is it Mkhitaryan? And I think we agree, right, that Pogba may be the slightly better option just for a surety of minutes, and
right
now with the kind of the marker that he's laid down in terms of attacking returns.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in terms of, you know, like ceiling, I think that Mkhitaryan is a higher ceiling in any particular game week, but yeah, I agree. I think that, I mean, would I still really, I'd still rather have basically any of the Liverpool midfielders. I'd rather have Mane or Salah, and I'd rather have Ali or Eriksen. So I would still put him and Mkhitaryan, you know, like fifth and sixth on the list of, and De Bruyne too. I'm not dropping De Bruyne, but I'm not like super enthused about spending $10 million on him at the moment. You know, maybe it's just too knee jerk. Yeah, I'm certainly going to give him some more time, but it's a lot of money.
Yeah. He gets a pass just because we've spent so much money on him. It seems super knee-jerky to give up on him straight away. Yeah, so Martin Neuer wants to ask about Manchester United's defense and how best to cover United defense without De Gea. Now, we actually we have the opposite response that you're looking for, Martin, in that we both went for De Gea.
Right, for the security reason. I mean, I didn't want to spend that much on a keeper, but I didn't want to spend $6 million on Eric Bailly, and I didn't want to spend $6.5 million on Valencia. I definitely didn't want to spend $5 million on Phil Jones, who...
No, just, why not?
You know, first of all, I don't think he's going to start forever. I mean, Lindelof is their like big expensive center back sign. He's clearly going to win that spot at some point. Phil Jones, you know, can't stay healthy. He makes so many mistakes. I don't know. I mean, just you bring in Phil Jones, and then every single week you're waiting for those clean sheets to come out, and you got your fingers crossed, hoping this is the week he actually makes the lineup. And I hate having a player like that in my team. I don't like the stress of it, you know?
Yeah. I think I like Phil Jones more than you do. I think he's a better defender than you might be giving him credit for. I agree. The injury concerns in the minutes do make me cautious, and we wouldn't recommend it.
I had him for like an 8-week stretch around the holiday fixtures last year, and I think I got like one clean sheet and like 1.4 times from him or something, and 3 times he didn't start. You know, so
yeah.
Maybe I'm a little biased still.
Fair enough. Anything else we want to cover with Manchester United before we move on? We want to talk about Liverpool as well.
Yeah, Liverpool. Nope. I think let's go right into it, Brandon.
Okay, so
it's a big section. It's just a question.
So I have in my notes that both Liverpool and Spurs were just like completely predictable in every single way, both in good ways and bad ways, right? With Spurs, a wingback got some attacking returns. Both Dele Alli and Eriksen looked fantastic, and Harry Kane is a slow starter. Right. Liverpool, on the other hand, incredibly predictable. Their defense looked completely shite, but their midfield had so many attacking options. Mane and Salah and Firmino all score. So the big question is, what the heck do we do?
You know, I don't know if the crossbars are like 3 feet higher in the Italian league or what. Most Salah must have blasted like six like clear goal scoring opportunities like 3 feet over the bar. He looked so good. I'm actually amazed that he only picked up, you know, one goal in the match because he looked so good.
His determination to score that goal when Firmino tried his cheeky chip, his determination to chase that down and put it in was fantastic.
He looks.
I wonder if Lukaku makes that run.
Yeah, that's interesting. He might. I mean, he looked really aggressive as well.
I guess that time last season when Lukaku kind of did the same thing, but tried to steal the goal away from Tom Davies.
So we both, exactly. What a jerk. I thought it was Bolasie, actually. Or maybe it was both of them. So Liverpool, here's the question is, I actually think Liverpool are slightly fixture-proof. Their attackers are, at least. I don't think there was any game where you couldn't expect them to score, especially when they're at home.
Yeah, I don't disagree.
So, you know, they play Crystal Palace at home in game week two, a Crystal Palace team that looked like one of the worst teams in the league, right? In game week one. Yeah, I know this is a knee jerk, but that's how they looked. So they play at home in game week one. Both of us have Firmino. It does make me, it gives me pause to not have any other Liverpool attackers. Cause I could see them putting another three or four goals up, but I don't think
you must feel slightly safer now that we see Firmino is taking pens.
Well, is he? I mean, as long as Milner is not on the pitch, you know, I mean, Milner didn't start. He was subbed on at the 70th minute or something like that.
You're too skeptical. So what we know is Milner probably won't start, and Firmino is definitely taking pens.
I'm risk averse. I'm just saying, you know.
But there was one preseason match in which Milner was on the pitch and Firmino took a pen.
Is that true?
That is a fact.
Okay. Because it was a game Milner was on and got subbed, and then there was a penalty that Firmino took.
Yes. And likewise, there was one where Milner was still on the pitch.
Gotcha.
So this is what we know. I'm not saying it's 100% certain that James Milner will never be able to kick a ball at a goal ever again. But that is just like a little extra zing on a Roberto Firmino pick that I just feel a slightly safer. So like Mane and Salah play this game, this like kind of a more quality version of Zaha's game where they just fly into the box and defenders have little choice but to take them out. So if we're looking at Mane and Salah doing that, there's a greater surety that Firmino is going to reap goal rewards.
Yeah, I don't even know how I'd bring in another Liverpool midfielder right now. I guess you
have to give up on City, right? You have to give up on De Bruyne.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't see you dropping Eriksen at this point.
And City's fixtures are so good that I just don't think I can do that. So, I mean, you just can't have everybody, right? And I think I like my Lukaku, Firmino, Kane frontline right now. I guess if Kane keeps blanking, then maybe I look at dropping Kane for a cheaper player. But I'll cross that bridge. I actually don't think that's going to happen. I don't mean to like totally give up on Kane, but
I mean, if there are two cliches about Kane, it's that he doesn't, well, it's a fact that he doesn't score in August, but a cliche that he has a slow start. And it's also that he scores against every London opponent.
Right.
So by this logic, Kane will probably come due against Chelsea next week.
And it's a Chelsea team that's missing two starters. So, it's going to be interesting. All right, Brendan, last question. Rufiel Solomon says, put faith in Gabby or trash him out?
Trash him out. Yeah, I mean, there are just so many options. We spent quite a bit of time talking about Meunier, and spare a moment for Jamie Vardy. He looked pretty decent.
Yeah.
Pretty decent.
Oh, hey, one. I was thinking about Chicharito here as someone you could swap him out for. One player who did look pretty good actually in that Man U game was Arnautovic. I thought he looked really attacking and like he was really going for it. So, I wish he was a little bit cheaper. He's 7 million, but I mean, Brandon, if you were looking for maybe it's too early for punts, but I mean, you know. Zaha to Arnautovic is not a bad move. They're away to Southampton, away to Newcastle, home to Huddersfield.
Definitely.
Pretty good run of fixtures the next few game weeks.
Yeah, that's a really good shout. I mean, they all were miles beyond where Andre Ayew was. So I think the attacking return is more likely to come from Arnautovic or Chicharito. But I like that shout.
Yeah, and yeah, Gabby. I mean, Gabby Deeney just. I really think he's going to lose a spot pretty soon to Charlie Austin.
Overall seems to be with the Southampton attack. I mean, I think the best advice that we could give is if you're thinking about Southampton, just bring in a defender and don't even worry about their attack. As good as their fixtures might be, surely there will be some goals scored. But, I mean, they're not scoring against Swansea, which is a pretty light team at the moment. And they had trouble scoring all during the preseason. They're one of the lowest scoring teams in the league last season. It's a big worry.
Yeah, it is a big worry. Brandon, let's take a quick break, and then let's do a quick preview of Game Week 2.
Same old podcast, always cheating.
Game Week 2. Brandon, have you thought about your transfers yet? I know we talked about this a little bit earlier in the podcast.
Yeah, sure. So not to just reiterate what my team is or belabor it, but I've got a lot of money in the defense, and I've got a lot of money up front. Now, clearly, that's where I can move money around because I need to make transfers in my midfield, which is kind of like a big failure right now. However, like you were saying, the Lukaku Kane Firmino front line is looking really good, really strong. We see some many goals coming from these guys in the coming months, assuming Kane gets going soon. My defense, Bertrand, Walker, Ake, there's nothing there that says to me I need to move them. There's money that I can get from there, but I'm happy with all of them. So what is my move? It's got to be to get rid of Zaha. Ryan Fraser, I think I give him one more week based on the fact that he played the full 90. Bournemouth is at home against Watford. It's a perfect opportunity for Bournemouth to bounce back. So I have
You're
faith.
In full on crisis mode.
No, I'm panicking. I'm sweating right now. So I mean, let's not gloss over the fact that I have Alex Iwobi on my team. So Zaha and Iwobi are the main targets. The question is going to come down to whether or not Zaha is fit. So I'm waiting at this point to hear anything from the Crystal Palace camp.
Yeah.
If Zaha looks fit, the aim is to get a free transfer so I don't have to burn four or do some sort of long-term strategy.
What about a Game Week 2 wild card?
Hey, you know, it's always on the table. But I think here's the strategy. So we can talk about this, Josh. If it's Game Week 2 and you need to do a double transfer, a long-term transfer strategy that involves bringing in a 4.5 midfielder, it just feels like I'm opening myself up a little bit for I just need points right now for my midfield. And if I chop Zaha out and bring in somebody, I mean, maybe Ruben Loftus-Cheek at 4.5 to free up cash for then Game Week 3. It just seems like too long of a stretch of time for me to really get some juice in my midfield.
You really, it almost sounds like you need a wild card. I mean, I'm not even trying to be flip here or anything, but it's almost like, because the way I had to do it was I actually had to bring in a 4 million defender because I just couldn't figure out how to find any money, you know, for these play. Like it's very tricky right now because there are so many Liverpool mids that you want, so many. I mean, to me, it actually might be cutting bait on De Bruyne ultimately, you know, because he's so much more expensive. And if you think that you can get as many points from Salah as you would from De Bruyne, and he's a million cheaper, then it's very hard not to go that route because, you know, a 10 million guy who's not going to be scoring a lot because Jesus and again, I don't mean to like just totally like I'm not closing the door on KDB or anything, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. Salah looks like he looks like he's ready to score every game week. So, I mean, it's really hard not to bring him in right now.
Yeah, I mean, there are moves that I could make, say, but that would involve getting rid of Firmino. Like, all the guys that allow me to do things I don't want to get rid of. So it's a classic dilemma. But I made a huge mistake by picking up two 5.5 midfielders that were both kind of punty with Iwobi and Fraser.
Well, it's so, only 1 week, you know. So
yeah. So I don't think I'm going to make any earth-shattering changes here. What about you?
Yeah, I'm not sure yet. I mean, WordPress is the player. If I was just looking to maximize game week 2 points, I would probably swap WordPress for Mui. It's tempting for me to hold another transfer because there's a concern that I might have replaced two defenders before game week 3 if Danilo and Higazi are both on the bench. I actually think, I mean, if Higazi's scoring, he looked, you know, I wonder if he might just, if, I mean, McCauley was getting subbed a lot near the end of game week, near the end of last season anyway. Remember, he was getting pulled like the 50th minute sometimes. And I wonder if he's straight into that squad when he's healthy. I mean, I wonder if Higazi might just, you know, win that spot for now.
McCauley is like legitimate 38 years old.
Yeah.
I don't know if he gets back into that squad the rest of the season. I think Higazi, if he looks great, if that defense looks shored up, Pulis doesn't have any motivation of any kind to bring him out of the squad.
Why? Yeah, exactly. So is he the captain? I can't remember. I thought he was maybe, but yeah, McCauley? That doesn't always matter anyway. I mean, Mertesacker was the captain. He got dropped. So, I think if I feel confident in Higazi and I can make the, what I want to do is maybe Danilo to Trippier, before game week 3, possibly if Danilo gets dropped. So I might drop WordPress from Mui. That would maximize game week 2 points. I think of in that 5.5 million range, he's the one that I would want the most. Or I just save it and have two transfers for game week 2.
Yeah. Okay. Should we run down these fixtures real quick? See what jumps out. Clean sheets, captain picks.
That sounds good. Yeah. Let's just go through this, very quickly. Cause I'm conscious of not going too long for this game week, for this first podcast of the game weeks.
Okay, the overwhelming, always cheating philosophical question. Do you captain somebody in the first early morning fixture on Saturday? We've got Manchester United away to Swansea. Big Ron looked great. Do you captain him?
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. Is there any reason not to?
No, I agree. I think it's, you just have to do it. It's less fun to have a captain in the first match, but it just seems like the standout favorite here.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could make an argument for one of the Liverpool players too. I think you could captain Salah or Mane at home of Crystal Palace. I think that is a totally legit move. I think Lukaku is the obvious choice.
Saturday also, this, it seems so unsexy, but I'm kind of excited about the Burnley West Brom match. A Burnley who kind of looked like they had their attacking game together against Chelsea, and a West Brom who we kind of undersold at the start of the season.
Right.
They look like that squad is gelling more than we thought they would. So I had no idea what's going to happen in this game.
Yeah, I agree. That is an interesting game. Let's see. Yeah, Leicester-Brighton is kind of interesting. I know a lot of people are looking at Vardy right now. I thought Vardy looked really good. I don't think I would spend that much money on him when you could get Firmino for 6 million. Yeah, or Firmino for that matter. Yeah.
Now, okay, so we've talked quite a bit about Liverpool. What do you think about them hosting Palace? And I think more importantly, what do we think about Palace? Are they going to be able to bounce back to that, like, miserable performance?
I don't know why you would think that. I mean, it's not like, I mean, their defense was bad last year and it looks bad again this year. I mean, they actually, Fosun Mensah looked pretty good and had that really nice stop. But I'm not a believer in Palace. I mean, I'm probably going to put Loftus-Cheek on the bench and go four at the back for my formation in game week 2.
It does put a little pressure on anyone who's really thinking about bringing in more Liverpool attack. Like, if you don't have any Liverpool attack, probably want to strongly consider bringing them in ahead of this Palace match.
Exactly. I mean, I wouldn't even want to watch those 10 o'clock games on Saturday if I didn't have a Liverpool player, because that's going to get crazy. And I'm actually excited, too, because it's my first visit to the Football Factory of the season, and I'm actually meeting up with a couple of FPL folks. So I won't say their names because it's all been on direct message. I don't want to betray any
secret identities,
secret identities or whatever. But yeah, I'll be at the Football Factory Saturday morning. So if you're there, come and say hello. Maybe you'll hear my voice. I'll be yelling at the screen for sure.
All right. The last fixture of Saturday is Arsenal v Stoke. We didn't talk about the completely unconventional formation that Arsene Wenger was playing, in which there wasn't a single central defender on the pitch.
So strange. Yeah.
And at the end of the game, it was just Nacho Monreal back there all by himself, occasionally partnering with Kolasinac.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Oh, I can't believe they won. I guess it was so unorthodox. You know, I was joking.
That's one way to do it. Just all attackers.
Yeah.
No defense.
I was, for people who follow American football. I was joking. It was like a spread offense, you know, or it was just a, these clumps of attackers together. And Aaron Ramsey basically scored his goal, and it was like having like a three wide receiver set where it was just like
third ball.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. Yeah, so I think Arsenal probably their attack looked fine. Lacazette looked good. We didn't talk about him at all. We didn't talk about him or Morata.
We didn't talk about Morata or Lacazette, the new boys, the new strikers.
Both look good.
I think Morata kind of comes out ahead after this week, certainly given that Morata like easily earned his starting spot over Batshuayi with that performance.
That headed pass was a beautiful. Yeah. Oh, so yeah. Nice.
He looked very composed at the end of that game when the pressure was on for Chelsea to put something, anything together.
Yeah.
And he calmly did so. I mean, Lacazette's headed goal was very nicely taken. After that, though, it was a little scattershot. So yeah. I feel like Morata comes out ahead.
That's true. I mean, Lacazette didn't have too many chances after that. That Arsenal squad is still kind of unsettled.
I think the problem is Ozil didn't look very good at all. He looked really off the pace.
Yeah, they knew.
It's just the first game, and maybe he needs to warm up a bit.
I don't think I'd overinvest in that Arsenal squad until Alexis is back. Yeah. Sunday, Huddersfield, Newcastle, which that's kind of a fun game, you know?
That'll be a fun game.
Yeah, yeah, and I think I'm actually leaning towards bringing in Moey. I just don't know that I believe in Ward-Prowse. I mean, he's on corners sometimes, but he got subbed in the game. There's some talk that he might not be a long-term starter for them, so... it could just be that I have that trend like that. It's kind of hard not to make a transfer after game week one. You want to just like maximize,
keep it going.
Yeah, exactly. It's something that, you know, James Eggersdorf, who's one of the top longtime FPL manager, who still doesn't follow us on Twitter despite many at messages. So,
dude, come on.
Yeah, come on, James. Someone who knows him. Come on, let's get the follow-up back.
Get him on the phone.
He talks about, you know, one of his strategies is really thinking about each game week on its own and trying to maximize points in those particular weeks, and not always thinking 3 or 4 weeks ahead, thinking about the game week that's in front of you. And I don't know that I've always been very good at that. I think I often, as we talked about a lot on this podcast already, I really value players who are consistent starters. But, you know, if I feel like that player is going to play the next game week and maybe the next two, then I should be considering them more often. So.
Newcastle, obligatory mention for the John Joe Shelby red card, just like a hashtag classic.
I know, what a joke. Spurs Chelsea.
This has got to be one of the marquee fixtures here, and Harry Kane is going to be on a lot of people's watch lists here. He's got to score in order to keep his spots in our FPL teams, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if he looks really bad, then maybe you just drop him for a while. And, you know, because I already have some Spurs coverage with Eriksen, so I could bring in Eriksen and Ali, or I could just, I mean, he, you know, 12.5 million, you really want some pretty consistent returns from him.
Yeah, watching that Newcastle match, I really felt like if you had Eriksen, and I mean, obviously, because Kane didn't, he got 1 point, you'd feel pretty good having a double with Eriksen and Kane, but Eriksen and Ali, but, that feels like it will be a masterstroke for a while.
Yeah, I mean, Eriksen, like, almost always plays the full 90, and he's like a bonus point magnet. So
he was running everything.
Totally. And shooting a lot. Yeah, I mean, to pick up 12 points from him, it was pretty awesome. And then Monday, we've got Man City Everton.
Yeah, another interesting game. Everton started off strong, but I don't think anyone's predicting them to do well at the Etihad. So the question here is, how many goals do City have in them? Jesus and Aguero both looked pretty good. Jesus had that unfortunate accidental handball that led to a yellow card, almost scored him a goal.
It was very harsh.
and much like Harry Kane, Kevin De Bruyne is going to be he's going to be on parole here, so you better do something.
See, yeah, that would be a move I would like to do. Would be if Jesus starts consistently starting and I mean, he's going to start, but if he starts consistently scoring, would be Kane to Jesus, and then KDB, because then you've got some Man City coverage. KDB to like Alley, and then I'd have like 2.5 million that I could spend somewhere else.
Something to watch for would be the continued early substitution of Jesus. I know that's really frustrating because you're losing out on possible points at the end of the game.
Right.
But that is usually a signal that the manager is keeping that player fresh for continued starts.
That's a good point.
So it's an interesting thing to pay attention to. All right, should be. I hope there are a million goals in game week two as there were in game week one.
You're going to be away in Barbados.
Yeah, I will be on Barbados, so we're going to have a guest podcast host filling my shoes. Our old favorite from last season, Dave Wegner Lodahl.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of people really liked that podcast when he was on. He was really he was a really good addition to the pod. Brennan, where can people find us?
Okay, be sure to follow us. We're on Twitter at Hail Cheaters, H-A-I-L Cheaters, Facebook.com/AlwaysCheating. Be sure to follow us for every single pod we post on SoundCloud. And our website is alwayscheating.com, where you can find links to all this stuff, including a link to join the Always Cheating Super League. We always are welcoming new managers. We have well over 1,500 at this point. It's amazing. Keep them coming. And if we haven't answered any of the questions that you have on this week's pod, just send us an email, hailcheaters@gmail.com. And Josh, we're still looking for people to support our humble little podcast effort. How can people do that?
You go to patreon.com/alwayscheating. Now, just as a note, we haven't talked about this too much on the podcast, actually, but we have a Survivor League that we're doing. We're not going to start the Survivor League. So anyone who pledges $3 or above is automatically going to get entry into the Survivor League. And I'm actually starting that at the second international break. I just felt like there's a lot going on the first few weeks of the season. Everyone's really focused on their FPL team, you know, but like come six or seven game weeks in, when you sort of have a handle on things, maybe you played your wild card, then that's when you need the extra juice. So I thought we'd start the Survivor League then. So if you have not pledged on support of the podcast yet, you get in the next, 6 weeks or so, and you'll be able to be part of that.
One last note on the Patreon page. For anyone who pledges on the Patreon page, we have discounts for the Fantasy Football Magazine. And I just wanted to say I got the third issue of FF Mag in the mail late this week, and it looks fantastic. They've got a team-by-team breakdown of every team in the league. So go to our Patreon page to see how you can get discounts and also win free copies of the magazine.
You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Acast, Stitcher, TuneIn, and basically anywhere where podcasts are being broadcast. You can find us. If you can't find us there, let us know ASAP, and we will get that set up.
All right, so good luck in Game Week 2. Think of me. I will be doing my best Watford impression as I'm on the beach in Barbados.
All right. Praise Mbakani.
Poku forever.
Pogba can shoot? All right.